Hey, it's WeZone. You're listening to Current Events, Politics, Presidents, and much more with Adam Lept and our official presidentologist, Dr. Ron Feinman, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor every Monday morning, starting a few minutes after 10, right here on WWGH 107.1.
And a very good summary Monday morning to you. Adam Lept here with mid-morning coffee break, and we celebrate the return of our official presidentologist. We had another presidentologist last week, but our official presidentologist hails from Florida, Dr. Ron L. Feinman, back from a very, very brief sabbatical. We're going to talk about current events, the 172 and a half candidates in the Democratic primary, of course, the immigration crisis, what he did during his sabbatical, and anything else I can manage to squeeze into about 43 minutes of talk. Ron, how are you doing on this nice, warm Monday morning?
I'm doing fine. I just got back over the weekend from Washington, D.C., visiting my son and doing a lot of the sights in the nation's capital. As always, a great place to be.
And we'll discuss that briefly. You didn't stop by. You know, D.C. is only about 6 hours or so east of where I hang my hat.
Yes.
But maybe next time.
Well, I have been in Cleveland and Cincinnati, but not before I knew you.
That's okay. We'll let you off easy this time. So we're going to, of course, discuss Dr. Feinman's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. A lot of interesting stuff he has been publishing since we last had a chance to enjoy his dulcet tones over these airways. But I want to just hit on three topics. First, we'll get the controversial one out of the way. We're not going to have a debate, Ron, on immigration. Sorry to disappoint you. And as people probably know, we see eye to eye on some things. The general idea that we do need reform. We also agree that we shouldn't have open borders and that people should only live here, stay here if they have a legal right to. But there are other things we don't really agree, which involve mostly the handling of people who are not here illegally and how we go ahead manifesting this whole puzzle, which seems to be getting more complicated by the day. So instead, what I wanted to do, Ron, is not be controversial, since you're the person with a PhD in a history-related topic, and I'm the person who never liked history, always thought I didn't really have to take history, was more interested in science, but I, of course, find myself more attuned to history and politics as I age. Not going to mention what the current
age is. Matured is what I would say.
Yeah. But you've seen memes, Ron, where different forms, but oftentimes it's an American Indian gentleman saying, you're all illegals, you're all aliens, you've all invaded my territory. So here are my two related questions, Ron. I'm sure you've seen those memes, and we're talking about that, of course, due to the controversial and well-publicized ICE raids that have and are taking place right now in our great United States of America. Of course, a lot of controversy. Everybody has an opinion, myself included. We're not really going to get into that opinion directly. But this topic of, Ron, this topic of, unless you are 100% American Indian or Native American, and you know, Native American, too, is not necessarily a completely accurate term. And the second part of my question might ask, is it accurate? Is it not accurate? But unless you are 100% Native blood, that you are in some way an illegal alien or an invader. Not unlike the millions of people that ICE is interested in removing from this country. So here's my first question, Ron. We've talked a bit. This difference between a settler and an immigrant or an illegal alien, which is a subset of an immigrant. So we often differentiate between a legal immigrant, an illegal immigrant or a legal alien, and also someone who has a temporary privilege to stay in this country. And a lot of this ICE stuff relates to people overstaying their welcome, as you know. But bottom line is, when Columbus sailed the ocean blue back over 600 years ago, and I wasn't around then and you weren't around then, nobody currently alive was.
Well, it's over 500 years ago, actually, 1492, oh. So it's 500 plus years.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, there I go again. It was so long ago, my math skills seems to have escaped me. But however long ago it was, the people that came over on the Mayflower, the Nina Pinta, Santa Maria, or whatever, you know, all those boats. I guess the Mayflower is a little bit later, but you know what I mean. All those boats, and settled in our great land. Were they in any way like the people coming here illegally, or were they settlers? Did they usurp the rights of the people living there currently, and the natives, by coming here, setting up a place to live, or earning a living in some fashion. Is there any truth to that?
No, I would not say that. Okay. The point is, a lot of them that came here were people that were trying to find a better life, and they, in some cases, were actual prisoners who were brought over and had a new start on life here. Of course, the leadership was aristocracy, but the average commoner was not. But, of course, they came in, they got the help from Native Americans, and then over time, they went to war against them. Which is not unusual, you know, because it became an issue of who has whose land.
Right.
So
right.
It became a conflict over time, but I would call them settlers. Still.
And
yes.
I would agree that the people coming here, for the most part, yes, some have criminal intentions, and I think Donald Trump is exaggerating the percent that do. I think they mostly do want a better life. This is the greatest, I want to say a word beginning with D and four letters, but you know what word I'm thinking of, the greatest you-know-what country in the whole another swear word I'm not going to say, world. And I'm very proud to be a citizen here and to live in this wonderful land, the land of opportunity. And I don't see why somebody wouldn't want to come here. Now, granted, most of the people that want to come here are from Latin America and Mexico.
Central America. Elsewhere, yes.
We do hear, why aren't Canadians coming here? Well, Canada has a different type of government. I wouldn't call it socialist, but it's more to the left, especially with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, the national health insurance, etc. There are things about Canada that generally attracts the people that are living there, and they don't want to leave. And that same thing,
except for the cold weather, that's the one thing.
The same thing might
but
also
other than
apply.
That, they don't have bloodshed and poverty. That's true,
right? To people in Europe, especially Western Europe and parts of Africa. I mean, Africa is a very diverse continent. There are prosperous parts, there are non-prosperous parts, and there are parts where in Mexico, almost the same way. Depends where you are in the particular part of the country. Not all of Mexico is poor. A lot of it is very prosperous. But there's no doubt. Poverty certainly is a serious problem in Mexico and other countries directly south of the United States. So although I agree most people want to come here in search of a better life, it's how they're doing it and their attitude about whether they think they're entitled to, which is different. But you and I would agree, Ron, that people coming here, again, regardless of what happens when they do attempt to gain entry, whether it's a legal or illegal type of entry, they're in search of a better life, not unlike Christopher Columbus's people and the pilgrims and all that stuff from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. But it is different. They are immigrants or people that want to be immigrants versus settlers. And we're talking about back in the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s. We would agree with that, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's why I mentioned when you've seen these memes where there's a picture of an elderly American Indian and he says, "You're all immigrants, you're all illegal." You and I would agree that, yes, we might giggle a little bit, but that is not fair. That is not fair to anybody as a human, even to the Indians. They don't believe that. I don't think so. I mean, some may, but I think in general that is really a fallacy. And as somebody who's a history scholar, Ron, I take your opinion about that very seriously. We don't have to agree about the way the immigration enforcement is going. We don't agree. We agree partially, but in general, it's probably 60 to 70% disagreement. But we do understand that a settler and an immigrant are not the same thing. And you and I are not illegal in the same way that someone who jumps over the fence from Mexico is illegal. We would agree on that premise, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So
yes.
when you've seen these memes again, where it says we're all illegal or nobody is illegal, when we've all come here through means that are not correct or proper,
I would not agree with that.
So I'm glad we agree because I thought we would. I mean, and that makes me feel good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not happy about all the arguing, all the name calling, and all that's going on with enforcing the borders, but bottom line, as I see it, if you don't want to deal with it, don't come here. Yes, be in search of a better life, but do it the proper way. And it is not the same as when Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue and the pilgrims came. There are some slight similarities. Yes, people were going from A to B, but you're really comparing apples to oranges, not to mention all the necessitated...
Not just to oranges, by the way.
Necessitated
orange juice over apple juice.
Right. Necessitated security from 9/11, from nuclear weapons, from cyber-based warfare. I mean, there are so many things. So that is very fallacious. And as an American, when I see that stuff, yes, I giggle, but I'm insulted. And I find it insulting against anybody. So let me pick your brain also, Ron, as a history scholar. We call American Indians Native Americans. But here's my question, and I'm sure you know what the question is. You've heard of the chicken and the egg question. Before the American Indians came to this great country, who lived here? Who really are the true Native Americans?
Some people think from China.
Or was the country empty and just they hatched out of an egg? I don't want to make a joke, but I want to know how far back
the Native Americans go, really. And they all warred with each other, by the way, too. It's not as if all these Native Americans, all different tribes, loved each other. There was plenty of bloodshed and warfare even before the white man from Europe came.
Right. But, I mean, who are the true Native Americans? Is that term for the American Indian, is it accurate? I mean, who lived in this country in, say, 300, 400 A.D.? I would assume you know, nonetheless, not your area of expertise in history. But
I have no idea, but it would be the ancestors, I guess, of these people. But again, they're all different tribes, and they all warred on each other, just like in European nations and Asian nations. There's always people fighting and killing each other. Correct. Over land, over you know, expansion.
But once there is settlement, and once there is citizenship and there are laws, that's where it does become different, not to mention technology. There was no... there were no nuclear weapons.
Yes.
There was no internet back in 1492. So even saying it's apples to oranges, they aren't even in the same. They aren't even 10 leagues back from being compared. It's totally different. Do you feel though, Ron? Because you know how I feel about these politically correct terms. Some I think are inaccurate, insulting, and embarrassing. Some I think are okay, and I use them. And some I'm not really sure about. Native American is in the category I'm not really sure about. And one thing is the word Indian also refers to somebody from India. So I sometimes will say Asian Indian.
That's a confusion,
India,
yes.
India Indian versus American Indian.
Well, we have Nikki Haley, whose family came from India.
Right.
And we have Kamala Harris's mother comes from India. Right. So, and they're considered Indian Americans,
right.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about the lovely Nikki Haley, of course, during this show, unless we run out of time, which we probably will.
Kamala Harris.
But
probably,
do you
yeah.
feel that yeah. Native American is an accurate term, political correctness aside, for what could also be called an American Indian? Or are there really people before that that really are the natives? Or am I getting a little nitpicky?
Well, I would use the term Native American because it's confusion with Indian Americans because of people coming from Asia. So I think Native Americans as a general term is acceptable. But, you know, again, there's so many different tribes. People don't realize how many different tribes there are. So it's really, if you're going to dissect it, it's much more complex than just saying Native Americans. Just say they're here, their ancestors were here before the people from Europe came over.
Also, to me, doesn't saying Native American instead of American Indian a bit of an affront to a person's heritage? It's like, if you know, I have no, as far as I know, American Indian blood. I am 100% Eastern European, and I think the ingenuity of American Indians is fascinating. Their culture, their dress, it's a fascinating group of people. So I'm probably a little bit envious. But is it maybe an affront to their heritage that we even say Native American? That is there anything wrong with American Indian? I mean, many people think that's an insulting term. I mean, like the Cleveland Indians. I mean, there's so much controversy over that team name.
And the Washington Redskins, yes.
Yeah.
Which I think is considered more insulting, the term Redskin. I think most people who are American Indians prefer Native American these days, but when I was young, it was always American Indians. So it's the in term for the moment, I guess.
Right, but you can see where
we say African Americans, we don't say Negroes, and we might say Black, but we often say African American. So a lot of it is politically correct terms, I guess.
But you can see where I'm getting at is that you have to look at it, not just say, well, that's what people want to be called, and do they want to be called? I don't know because, you know, I don't have any Native blood in me as far as I know. But it is an interesting...
I think on Ancestry.com we find you do. I think a lot of Americans do more than
yeah,
we realize.
It is.
But we can't be sure we do, but I'm sure a lot of people who came in earlier times might have been. Not so much people came in the last century like your family and my family, but people from earlier centuries very much likely do have some Native American blood.
Right. But it is an interesting topic, though, and it's almost a case where I ask a person, what do you want to be called? I think of a Black friend of mine, And we were just talking once, and this was about 15 years ago, again, as political correctness seems to become more at the forefront every year. But we were kind of joking around, and I just asked him, well, what do you think of the term African-American? He says, I don't like it. I'm not from Africa. I'm from Columbus. And that's kind of how I see it.
So what does he call himself, black?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Right. Well, black, yeah. I mean, where is he from?
Is he very black or is he more brown, though, with no skin tone?
You know, I just regular, you know, I don't judge my friends by that stuff, but I'm interested in people's
culture. I know, but there's different shades of being black,
right,
is what I'm saying. And then there's those who are brown. So the question is the word black even correct?
Right. But is white correct? Unless you're a white albino, your skin is not white. I'm light.
Yeah, we're really not white. That's right. True. We're not.
And
yeah.
I say white albino
The terms
because,
are a little crazy. Yeah.
Because there can be black people can be albinos also, which is also very fascinating. Skin tone and the way that it's talked about is another topic that I find just interesting and controversial, and don't mind talking about it because I'm not someone who's afraid that someone's going to, you know, say, well, that's not politically correct. Well, I think we should talk about it. That gets things out in the open. But no, I'm certainly of the lighter end of a white person. But no, my skin isn't white, but I am a white person. That term doesn't offend me because that's what I am.
Caucasian is actually the term that's used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Caucasian also encompasses other might be called races or colors or types or groups of people. So,
I think basically, if we could just stop thinking, we could talk about it, and just look at each other as human beings and judge each other as individuals, that'd be the best thing to do.
And that's the problem with political correctness.
By race or religion. Yeah.
Ironically, Ron, sometimes it ends up being counterproductive to what it's supposed to do. It's like, well, we are kind of overanalyzing, but instead we're just human beings. Isn't that a little bit easier? That's kind of how I see it. So, yeah, we're not going to spend a whole show on this, and we've already gone through 17 minutes, but I think it is fascinating. And I was interested in what you would think about the term, how we denote people that have been in this country or ancestors of people who were in this country 500 years ago or more, and about what you've seen where, again, there's a photo and it says, well, you're all illegal. And that's not true. And I think we both understand
that.
And that insults me. And I've seen a lot of very intelligent people who have said that and makes me kind of question. And I think that these people maybe not really believe that themselves deep in their heart. It's just the political correctness has totally invaded their manner of thinking. And with me, I'm an independent thinker. And sometimes something trying to be politically correct is a good way for me to think that it's probably wrong. And that very well be what happened here. So food for thought. Again, listeners, you know, controversial topic. We don't mind delving into that stuff here. Ron's information, contact him, is on his blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. And with me, again, just send an email to our private email server where all emails are read, not deleted, adam@wwgh1071.com. So first of three topics, and of course it took twice as long as expected, but it was very interesting. It was fascinating. So anyway, Ron, you went to our national capital, Washington, D.C.
For the umpteenth time.
Earlier
I can't
this
count
month,
how many
and,
times I've been there, yes.
Did you happen to run into Donald and his lovely wife, Melania, or did you not visit them at all?
No, I didn't have a ability to go to the White House. It wasn't possible, but I did go to the National Portrait Gallery, which is absolutely amazing, wonderful place. I spent a whole day there, basically. I also went to the African American Museum of History and National Museum of African American Museum History and Culture, and spent the whole day there. I mean, there's so much to see in these museums. Also spent a day at the Holocaust Memorial Museum, which also is amazing, but it's very depressing in many ways. But a whole day, I mean, you could spend 5-6 hours there. No issue at all. It's very easy to do that. And also went to a number of other places, including the Peterson House and Ford's Theater, and also the Lincoln Cottage. So we spent a day with Lincoln, and that was fascinating as well. So we really focused on spending a whole day in a number of places because there was a lot to see. And we also went to the Woodrow Wilson House, in D.C., the only president other than Obama to have retired to the district after he left office. that was fascinating. So we had a lot of history this week and a lot of dealing with issues of the issue of African American history and of Jewish history at the Holocaust Museum. It was really a very interesting week. When and also went to a baseball game, watching the Nationals beat the Kansas City Royals as well.
When you went to Cincinnati, I believe you visited the Underground Railroad Museum. Cincinnati, as listeners probably know,
yes,
is a big stop.
Yes, and also William Howard's Taft historic site. Yes.
It's near the Mason-Dixon line, but again, so is D.C. It was a big stop on the Underground Railroad, and you visited that museum.
It was a great location to go to, yeah.
How does that compare to the attractions you visited in D.C.?
Well, the ones in D.C. are much bigger in size, you know, as far as, you know, the amount of space and the amount of emphasis. So D.C. is still better, but honestly, all over the country, there are different sites that deal with the Holocaust and deal with slavery and deal with discrimination, and I've done a lot of those places around the country, but D.C. is always bigger because there's so much more space, and they have museums that really devote a great amount of attention to a lot of these issues that people should really visit D.C. and go to these museums.
So you didn't run into any politicians or anybody really interesting or famous other than yourself?
No, honestly, I did not, and I was glad. I wanted to get away from it for a week. Although I did write my blog, I had set it up ahead of time, and I just clicked on it each day, so I was able to put an entry in. But no, I wanted to get a break, and it was good to get away.
Was going to ask you if Melania's hair smelled good, but you didn't see her, so I guess we'll
No,
never,
I did not.
Never know. So Ron is the author of a blog that he's been writing for almost 11 years, theprogressiveprofessor.com. A lot of it, the entries are just history, some are opinion, sometimes to the left, sometimes kind of in the middle. It really depends, and you'll learn a lot just by 1 or 2 minutes of reading every day, and I strongly suggest that you bookmark this site and peruse it regularly. One of the recent entries you had, Ron, certainly tickled my fancy. As you know, I have a bit of an affection for another lady who has very nice hair, Nikki Haley. And we've talked before, could she possibly be the new vice president? President Donald and Vice President Nikki Haley. Or maybe if Donald Trump gets impeached, could Mike Pence nominate her as vice president? I mean, there are things I don't agree with her on, for example, the abortion issue, but there are things that I do, and she certainly is a very moderate Republican, very smart and multicultural. And I said, easy on the eyes, that's not the most important thing, but a politician is a public figure and should present a good image, and I think Nikki does.
Yeah, she's one of the very few people
very well spoken
left the administration with a good reputation, honestly. Very, very few.
Yeah, I think she's a person of excellent ethics, and I think she resigned because she didn't want to deal with Donald anymore, at least in the position that she was in, but maybe things would change.
But would she want to be his running mate is the issue. That's a big question.
Well, that kind of brings me to a topic which will digress for a bit. We had a substitute presidentologist last week, and also when you had went to Europe with your son last month, and that was Mike Purdy. Mike and I discussed politics. We discussed a lot of time we spent last week on his governor, which I'm quite a fan of, Jay Inslee, who has hopes of being president. Probably won't get it, but I would vote for him. I do like the guy. He's very smart and does understand science, unlike some people. But he's the author of the book, 101 Presidential Insults. Ron has made reviews of the book that are in the print. I wrote a review on Amazon. In that book, we consider the fact that presidents often, using language we don't want to talk about on the air, insult each other, insult vice presidents, insult other candidates. So we were kind of getting at Nikki Haley and Donald Trump may not always be best buds, but politics make strange bedfellows, so maybe they could end up being one and two in an administration. When I talked to Mike during your European trip, Ron, we talked a lot about the book and kind of giggled about some of the passages. Did you enjoy my discussion with him?
Absolutely. You know, he's a very entertaining speaker himself, Mike Purdy, and the book is really great.
We do
the show was really wonderful.
Yeah, we do recommend folks purchase it. Again, a replay of my show with him last week is on our website, wwwgh1071.com. Now, on the 13th of June, which I believe was last Saturday, you write...
July, you mean, not June.
July, yeah. Well, time flies when you get old, as my mama always told me.
Yeah.
Could Nikki Haley replace Mike Pence as VP candidate for Donald in 2020. It seems startling that such would occur, as Mike Pence has been a loyal soldier for Trump, refusing in any way to take a stand against anything Trump says or does, and therefore is perceived as unwilling to challenge his boss. The fact that Haley is also of heritage from India through her parents might also draw some ethnic support to Trump. And again, as I mentioned, Pence is a very conservative Republican. I agree in some ways with his economic principles, but when it comes to people stuff, I find myself some ways repulsed, and in some ways disagreeing might be a polite way of saying it. Nikki Haley, though, is actually quite progressive when it comes to people issues. We don't agree on the pro-choice issue, but she certainly doesn't have a stand as stringent as Mike Pence does. And economically, I think I'm probably going to see almost eye to eye to her. We certainly agree she's very smart. Her being a female of multiple ethnicities, that will help as we take a look at the human being also. And a very good speaker. I think she would be an excellent choice. If anybody might be the first female to be president or vice president, Nikki might be it. But is that possible, Ron? Would Donald really be willing to change VPs? Or is the more possible scenario that Pence would take over as president after Trump resigns or gets impeached and might nominate Haley? We've talked about that several times. Any of those scenarios possible, or am I living in a pipe dream with my hopes that she might end up with a top office?
Well, I mean, it's very rare that a president, as you would say, dumps his vice president. It's very, 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 very unlikely. Only FDR a couple of times did it, and also Abraham Lincoln, and also Thomas Jefferson, and also Andrew Jackson. But that's the only cases. It's you know, even Spiro Agnew, as controversial as he was on the ticket for 1972 for the second term of Nixon, and even George H.W. Bush you know, did run with Dan Quayle when he lost his second term in 1992. Many people thought maybe he should dump Dan Quayle because he came across as a bit of a moron, but he kept him. But of course, Trump does not follow the norm, so he might just decide, yes, he's going to dispose of him, and I'm sure Pence would say nothing. He would be a loyal soldier, just like everybody else who's fired, and say nothing. But honestly, I think Pence has done a good job from Trump's viewpoint, but I think Pence is very careful not to disagree with his boss, so I would think the odds are he's going to stay on the ticket. Now, as far as if he gets to be president, by succession, by whatever means, then I think he might pick Nikki Haley. But that would be the future. It would not be now. I now have to admit that I don't think Trump's going to be removed from office during this term. It doesn't look like it, because it looks like Nancy Pelosi is not moving in that direction, even though four members of the House majority, four women, newly elected people, have become critics of her, and this has become a major controversy now. And even Donald Trump has gotten involved, saying they should go back where they came from, these four women. But only one of them was born overseas. The other three, including AOC, Ocasio-Cortez, were born in the United States. So it's causing a big controversy that he's saying they should go back where they came from, when only one, Omar from Minnesota, is actually born overseas, although she's citizen.
On the 12th of July, see, I said the right month this time. And just by the way, Ron, I thought when you said dump quail, I thought you almost said duck quail. That would be kind of funny because ducks and quails are similar animals. But you said dump quail, not duck quail, with the pun. Not intended, because it didn't exist, but it still was kind of funny. I think you would agree, yeah, though, Ron. Dan Quayle, I mean, I think he's more, and we've talked about this before, he's more intelligent than he's given credit for, but he's not going to be appointed to Mensa anytime soon. He really wasn't. He didn't do anything as a vice president. I mean, he was basically harmless. But I think a stronger vice president, especially with George H.W. Bush following the very strong presence of Ronald Reagan and being, you know, not the greatest VP in the world, but certainly he was around and respected due to his very good resume and excellent military knowledge also, that just having a weak vice president really was his was a ticket to disaster. And I think
1902. But also, this gives us a chance to mention someone that has not been talked about much and died this past week, Ross Perot. Ross Perot died. He was so significant 30 years ago, and almost nothing much said about him when I was away. A bit, but mentioned he died, but not much attention paid to it. And I was surprised. Yeah, well, and he's been forgotten so much.
Yeah, well, I call him P-Rot. That was just kind of funny, but we'll talk about Mr. Perot or P-Rot a little bit during the show. Yeah, I admire the guy. Like Donald Trump, a rich businessman who wanted to be president. He lost, but Donald won. And Perot, I think, as more of a Southern gentleman type person, could very well have been a good president. He was just kind of
I think better than Trump, honestly. Yeah. I think he would have been.
Kind of a squirrely little
guy. Might have been. Yeah.
Kind of a squirrely little guy, but very smart. And maybe we do need a CEO type as president. And that's what I think a lot of people had in mind with Trump. And whether that's occurred, that's up for debate. But Perot very well could have won. And he was very moderate, very independent, many ways, like myself. And I didn't vote for him, but I know I would not have been upset if he would have won. And I think he was a good man with his heart in the right place. I mean, we do.
I must say he won 19% of the vote, although not winning any state, no electoral votes. It was the second most to Teddy Roosevelt's 27% in 1912. And Teddy Roosevelt was a former president running on a third-party line. So that's something that's memorable, that Perot was second best ever in percentage of the popular vote for a third-party candidate.
So anyway, Ron, on the 12th of July, last Friday, you ponder the possibility of a female president and vice president. And I would say, well, that's fine with me, but I think one at a time. And that's kind of how things are going to work. We have one female as president or vice president, the other one being of the male persuasion. And you talk about some possibilities, Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar. That's another example of a very far-left Democrat and a very moderate Democrat. But sometimes you need to do that because it's going to get voters, just like with either Trump or Pence as president and Nikki Haley as a very moderate Republican as vice president. So that's something which might come to mind. Also mention Kamala Harris with Amy Klobuchar, and that adds another wrinkle that Kamala Harris is most multi-ethnic. And so would we want to have that many quote-unquote minorities in high office? Would it gather votes? I guess we'd have to find out, wouldn't we?
Well, I want to point out that New Hampshire and Arizona have had all-women teams in top state government positions. So it's happened in a couple of states. So it could happen, but I would doubt it. But I did mention that, New Hampshire and Arizona.
But I think in all practicality, I would not at all be surprised to see a female somewhere on the ticket for this coming election, but two females.
Especially with the 2020 election being 100 years after the 19th Amendment. So yeah. It would be fitting to have it happen.
Yeah, it would be surprising. There's been a lot of talk, and Mike and I touched on this last week, of Kamala Mania, her showing, which many people felt was very good in the debates. And not really being that well known, and now everybody is talking about her, Kamala Harris. Again, her interesting mixed race ancestry, being referred to as a female Barack Obama. And again, she's not too hard on the eyes either, and that certainly does help. We've previously mentioned my disgust at what she had to say about ICE, comparing it to the KKK. And I do think she is well-spoken. I think she's smart. But I don't want to see her in the White House. I feel she is a security risk because I don't like her comments about immigration enforcement. And I also think that, like John Kerry did, she's throwing people a line. Bernie Sanders the same way. And I'm inclined not to believe her. Biden, you kind of know what you're getting. Klobuchar, you pretty much know what you're getting. There have been talk about she's not always as nice as she seems, but who knows? But in case of
many presidents are not as nice as they seem in public, it shouldn't really matter, I would argue.
And that's why Mike Purdy wrote the book, among other reasons. And, of course, we talked about that. But do you think the Kamala mania is going to subside, or is she going to kind of come from near obscurity to the White House like Barack Obama did?
Well, I think her opportunity has increased to be the candidate. But also, as I wrote just yesterday on the 14th, I think we might see Julian Castro, who did well, not as much notice, but he did make Beto O'Rourke, a fellow Texan, not look very good in their first debate. And he does represent the largest minority in the country, people of Hispanic ancestry. One out of every six Americans is Hispanic. And I've always liked Julian Castro, the former mayor of San Antonio and Housing and Urban Development Secretary under Obama. So I think he's someone to watch, and he's gotten enough. I just read the last couple of days he's gotten enough donors, 130,000 are needed for the third debate in September. He's reached that, so he's going to still be around in September, and I think he has a real opportunity to rise. And we could have him, if he was to be elected, he would be, of course, a different minority, but he would also be the third youngest president, younger than Bill Clinton and Ulysses S. Grant, both of them were 46, but in actual months, he's younger. So he would only be older than John F. Kennedy and Theodore Roosevelt. That would make it four generations of leadership that were young. John F. Kennedy, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Julian Castro.
So he is an intriguing possibility.
I think very much so, yes.
Along with the multiply previously discussed, does that make any sense? Pete Buttigieg, who wouldn't even be 40 years old when he stepped behind the desk at the Oval Office, would be the first openly...
Pete Buttigieg, however, has a problem. He has got no black support at all. And be the Democratic nominee, you've got to get black support. It's a large percentage of the party. And I think a lot of it has to do with his being gay, because a lot of blacks are very religious and they don't like the idea of a gay man. And I think that's going to be a major problem for Mayor Pete, unfortunately.
It certainly will be a topic of discussion and controversy, but that's what we do here on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. We don't mind talking about controversial stuff and invite you to form your own opinions. If you want to swear at the radio, that's fine. You're allowed to do that. We certainly delved into controversy earlier, and we're going to continue to do that because that's what needs to be talked about. Let's spend less time covering things up, worrying about offending somebody with political correctness, and let's have a good dialogue about stuff and see what we can find we have in common or not in common, and do that as mature adults. It really does work wonders. Now, we've talked a bit, Ron, off the air about the Nike shoe and the Colin Kaepernick capers, and also my disgust and displeasure at Mr. Castro agreeing with Kaepernick and agreeing that the Betsy Ross 13-star flag is a symbol of racism. And I told you, and I still stand by this, I was impressed by the guy.
I think it's a silly issue. I don't think he should have brought it up, honestly, Castro. Yeah. They say too much sometimes because they're asked. I wonder if he was asked or he brought it up himself. But, of course, newsmen always ask questions and they put people onto the spot. But I think it's this issue, yes.
If you can't be put on the spot and answer a question, you shouldn't be in politics, because that's what politicians have to do. And you kind of test them and see, can they work well under pressure? And as I mentioned, I did like Castro. He has many ingredients to success, and I think his ancestry and being from Texas will get votes, and that's part of what you need to do to run for office. But I don't like for one bit his comments and his agreement with Kaepernick. I think Kaepernick's a whack job. Let me go ahead and just say that, and if that causes people to get upset, I'm sorry. I can understand his kneeling at the national anthem. I don't agree with it, but I see that within his right of self-expression, even though I think it's disrespectful. But the shoe thing, the Betsy Ross flag, symbol of racism, give me a break. It is not a symbol of racism. Betsy Ross, even though we're not really sure she sewed the flag, but in legend she did, so let's say she did. She certainly was involved with that. She's an American hero, and we could take our current flag and look at discrimination against many different kinds of people and say, well, the whole United States is a symbol of discrimination. No, it's not. People aren't perfect, and we work toward accepting our differences and embracing our culture. But no, the fact that Castro made it very clear he agrees with that and feels the flag is a symbol of racism, that's not cool, and he's been crossed off my list of potential people I support.
Oh, my God. You're knocking everybody off the list now, aren't you?
Well, the main people, again, I know Joe the hair sniffer is not perfect, but he's a good mainstream choice, and you know where he stands. I do think he's too old. I really like Jay Inslee, including when I talked to Mike last week. Mike has met him, again, personable. Obviously, very smart. He and Pete Buttigieg, I think they could be in Mensa, or maybe they already are. I think Inslee is obsessed with climate change. I agree it's important, but not to the extent he does, but that's okay. At least he understands science, and it is something that he really has fought for. And as we talked a bit off the air, being from Washington State, home of, you know, a company which I would call a gentle giant, Microsoft, you know, Bill Gates, the main founder there, is a tremendous philanthropist along with his wife. What a model of someone who's rich and shares his knowledge, is still a good down-to-earth guy. And what is he and his wife have done as philanthropists is just amazing. So again,
yeah, I want to mention one thing about Jay Inslee. However, he is, if you want to compare him to other candidates on the quote old end quote side, he would reach the age of 70 after about 3 weeks in office. So he actually is the fourth oldest person running. The only others older are Sanders, Biden, and Warren. So he would be basically just short of 70 by a couple of weeks. So as far as the age issue, his age is not the best thing either.
Right. He's comparable to the age Reagan was at when he took office.
Yes, exactly.
So
yes.
A little on the old side.
February 9th, and he was February 6th. So he would be 70 within a few weeks.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, yeah. Biden looks very healthy, but let's face it, he's pushing 80, and he's getting up there.
So Inslee. Is Sanders. They'll both be 80 within a year or more. Yes.
Well, the chance I'd vote for Sanders, I'm not sure what kind of analogy you want to make, but I think you know what I'm getting,
I'm just saying they're both. I mean, he would be 80 by September of the first year of the term, Sanders. Yeah. Biden after 14 months.
And he looks 180, but Biden, to me, looks pretty healthy. But, yeah. I don't make it a disqualifier, but I wish he was like 15, 20 years younger. So,
oh, gosh, do I wish it.
Yeah,
I mean, he had been able to be elected in 1988, but, you know, it didn't happen, yeah.
But, yeah, Inslee, intriguing candidate. I wish he had a better chance, and he could very well be a VP nominee, and that would certainly...
But, again, an older VP nominee, but so was Joe Biden. So,
but as I mentioned... Being from Washington State, home of Microsoft, again, a company that I call a gentle giant, and Bill Gates, he understands the necessity of big business, not trickle down like Reagan and some Republicans, but big business coexisting with small business owners, people like myself, people that work 9-to-5 job, retired people, people on disability, that you can all kind of get along. And I think being in Washington as a governor and a popular governor, he understands all that. And not to mention another big thing is his statewide net neutrality law, which he fought for, and they have. Washington has its own net neutrality law. They've thumbed their nose at Donald Trump and his lack of understanding of science and the reason and how the internet works. And that's very important to me. And I think
if you imagine Inslee against Trump on science and technology in a debate, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
That would certainly be a sight for sore eyes. would be something on the Comedy Channel, and I certainly would be interested in watching it. I'm already getting excited by the thought of that. But yeah,
if you had Pete Shig versus Mike Pence on the issue of gays and abortion and things like that, both from Indiana, that would also be a fascinating VP debate.
That would certainly be one for the ages. But Inslee, I wish he had more support. I kind of wonder why, because I tell you, there's a lot of people who do value science, and Inslee is very well spoken. And Mike said he's met Mr. Inslee, very good guy. I'm kind of wondering. He's kind of like that dark horse, and you may see him increasing in popularity. Who knows?
He has to do well in the next debate, of course. That's improved.
We shall see. Unfortunately, our time has come to an end. Gosh, we pretty much covered everything, Ron, and again, including a nice summary of my talk last week, looking at some of the candidates from controversial issues, pondered political correctness, and that's bit of a favorite topic of mine, but I think we need to get some of the stuff out in the open. We agreed that settlers and immigrants are not the same thing. And, of course, there are different types of immigrants, and with the ICE raids, a lot of heated talk about it, and we encourage people to continue to do that. Differing opinions are what makes this country great. We all agree that freedom of speech is wonderful and one of the things that we all value as Americans, and I value that more and more every day. Politics.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be back on your show. I had those two breaks, but no more coming.
Politics and talk radio, free speech at work. Have a great rest of your Monday, Ron, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much.